We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line and hits again.
Memories have been made.
Halliburton. A deep three for the lead!
And baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away! Hits the three at the buzzer to win the game!
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hit!
But this is Indiana.
Throws it down!
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Pacer Nation, what is going on? Welcome back to your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. I'm your host, Alex Gold. I'm joined today by Michael Fauci, and the Pacers take down the Knicks 125-111. Fauci, just a week ago, the Pacers lost to this team in dramatic fashion, and there is one difference in this game. They actually rebounded. They rebounded. It makes a difference.
Hey, you know, you could say one difference, some say two. I was not in the building. You know what? I was a game time decision. I had a friend really trying to talk me into this game.
Thank God.
I was really rolling it over. I decided to stay home, and you know what? Indiana got the win. Awesome stuff. But that rebounding battle, Alex, that was everything. That was the key to this game. And I never thought I'd be, you know, New York could be without Julius Randle. They could be without OG, Mitchell Robinson. But never thought maybe the biggest thing could be no Isaiah Hartenstein.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was a big difference from last time to this time, and Indiana actually out-rebounded one of the best rebounding teams in the league, 41-32. Real quick before I go on a tangent, I just want to say when we were talking about the rebounding differential, last game, New York had 60 rebounds, 24 of them came on the offensive side of things. That was the difference in the game.
No, it really was. And, you know, I tease you a little bit. I try to set you up there thinking I was going to call you out.
I thought you were.
And
yeah, it worked.
You know what, though? The curse was in effect last night. You said that Pascal Siakam would score 19 and a half, and you took the over. How many points did Pascal Siakam finish with last night?
19, classic fashion. I think he had 19 with, like, I don't know, it could have been like 6-7 minutes to go. I was like, all right, he'll get like fouled at some point.
He missed a couple threes that I thought were going in.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he had opportunities. You know, look, it was I felt that he was due. Long story short, I felt that he was due for a better game against the Knicks than last time, and that is exactly what he did. Last time against New York, he struggled a bit in that performance. I got the numbers. He was 8 of 19 shooting. Just felt like, 19 shots. Like, I think he had 18 points in that game. Like, not great. This time against New York, 8 of 13 shooting for 19 points. just felt far more efficient, looked comfortable. And, you know, I think that Siakam was one of those players that got Indiana off to a hot start in that first half.
Yeah, but I think the guy we should really start things off here with was the guy that set the tone early on, and that was Miles Turner. Goes 9-9. I don't know if that's the first time he's ever done it, but I think it might have been. Goes 9-9 from the field, Fauci. Led the team in scoring with 23 points. Also had 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal. Still no blocks for him, but, you know, I felt like Turner really set the tone. And we talked about it after the game against the Warriors. He just has looked 2 steps slow. And then in this game, he looked more energized. He was seeking out contact. He was, you know, shooting the ball with confidence. We've always talked about when he gets things going early, he looks like a totally different player. Mm-hmm. He had that great pass to Siakam at the top of the key down low in the first quarter. It's like Miles was really just feeling the game out, and it felt like he was really excited. So I don't know, maybe he was just licking his chops seeing Taj Gibson was their starting center for the Knicks instead of Isaiah Hartenstein. And so, hey, you know what? I wish that Miles Turner would just look at every other center in the league like they're a Taj Gibson and play with that much intensity, because when he plays like that, this team is totally different.
Totally different. And this was a great bounce-back performance for Turner, because Turner really struggled against New York last time around. He had 5 points, 5 fouls, 2 of 6 shooting. I don't think he even played the fourth quarter. And then this time around, you know, Turner already in the first quarter, he had exceeded his production from that last game against the Knicks. I just felt that Turner and Siakam, that duo, first quarter, first half, whatever it was, I mean, they were really asserting themselves, making themselves known. You know, 9 of 9 shooting, Turner, you can't ask for anything more than that. I want to say that I saw the Pacers put out a stat. He's like the 5th Pacer to ever go at least, you know, 9 of 9 in the game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, great. It's something that doesn't come along often, but this was a game that I felt that Indiana was in control throughout. I mean, first quarter, they shot, you know, just over 70%. And then we'll get to it later, but also sometimes it's the biggest thing is how you close out games. In Indiana, they showed up in the fourth quarter. There's a lot to unpack in between, but I just felt that you saw what felt kind of like a complete performance, because last time against the Knicks, remember, great first half. Where were they in the second half? They were treading water. You know, it just felt like just trying to hold on in that second half last time. That was not the case. The Pacers got better, it felt like, as this game went on.
No, they really did. And I think if we want to just continue in this trend of looking at guys that really stepped up, all 5 starters played over 30 minutes. And I think that's a big point in terms of, like, you know, how much they relied on these guys. We talked about Siakam a little bit, but I felt like Haliburton playing 30 minutes, it was nice to see him back that higher number.
This feels good.
Looked like himself quite a bit there early on. He still didn't look like totally himself, just kind of feeling it out. But then as the game progressed, and you could tell he was kind of chirping with DiVincenzo, Josh Hart, when he got called for that foul in the second quarter. Like, Ty was jawing a little bit more. He seemed a little bit more engaged, energized, enthusiastic with the Pacers this game compared to last game against Golden State, when he kind of looked dejected a little bit. I think the Buddy Hield stuff has kind of, you know, it's mellowed out a little bit. It's been a couple of days. Like we said, time heals all wounds. But, like, reinserting himself back in for the final 3 seconds of the third quarter and then hitting that step back three that touched every part of the rim, started to come out and then went back in, and then that pass that he threw off the backboard to himself, then find Siakam wide open in the corner for 3. 12 years ago, exactly on that same date, Kobe Bryant did the same thing.
That's wild.
And found Pau Gasol open. So it's just kind of crazy. The game that Tyrese was having, he loves to perform in the Garden. And I think that if the Pacers and the Knicks were to be in a playoff series, it's going to be a lot different, because you're going to have a more healthy Knicks team and it's going to be more difficult. But I just think that Tyrese Haliburton has a lot of Reggie Miller in him in terms of wanting to perform at the Garden.
I think so. And look, the Garden, some call it, you know, the Mecca, whatever you want to call it, it's just, it brings out the best in a lot of, you know, players. And I just felt that, like, we saw the Pacers, you know, come out sluggish against Golden State. They definitely did. They did not have it. But when they came to New York, I felt like this time around, I mean, that crowd, when I was in the building last time, they were rocking all game. And I felt like Indiana knew this was going to be an environment that's like, hey, we're going to have our hands full tonight, no matter who they have out there. They beat us shorthanded last time. Be ready. And I felt that Indiana was ready. Haliburton not having that same minutes restriction from last time was massive, because when you talk about that three that looked like he was, you know, flushing something in the toilet. I mean, it went all the way around. That, to me, was the momentum shifter that Indiana needed in that game, because when he hit that three, got the numbers right in front of me. It sparked a 19-8 run that ended up giving the Pacers a lead that was, you know, ended up ballooning to 22 points. It just felt that like they continued that going into the fourth where they were hot. And that three, it was just huge. But also, I mean, the play that you mentioned before, the off the backboard, you know, the pass to Siakam, like that was like the headliner. You know, I mean, you saw some of the good, you saw some of the bad. That play caught the attention of everybody. Fortunately, Obi Toppin's missed a dunk where he tried to go through the legs. That caught the attention of a lot of people as well. I'm happy that Haliburton had that moment to kind of flush out some of that Obi Toppin play, because you could feel for Obi. He always wants to put on a show against the Knicks. It's like that little revenge factor. Hey, I'm back home. This, it was unfortunate that he missed that dunk. I get what he was going for. You had a good tweet about it. I can't remember exactly what it was, but you know, what was yours? You're basically saying something along the lines of like, if he makes it, you know, hey, like that's great. If he misses it, yeah, it is kind of warranted to be like, all right, we got to take you out. Like this is, you know, your words would be better than mine.
Well, I mean, to me, it's like he just did that dunk on a dead ball effortlessly and made it. And so I felt like he kind of started too late when he went to go do it. Like he was already past the free throw line. And when he went to go between the legs, he kind of got caught up on the rim because he didn't give himself enough of a leeway to get there. And I felt like it was too tight on that fast break to really make that move, Fauci. So I was like, why is he doing this now? Like, I get it, but if this game is not a 14-point win by the Pacers, and they lose this game by 2 points or 1 point, like it's a totally different ball game, and people are going to rip him left and right for this situation because he didn't have to do that. I mean, yeah, there's no problem with wanting to put on a show, and I think some people even said, if you're doing this at home to try to get the fans involved, like engaged, that makes a lot more sense too, but doing it on the road, it's a little bit different. So I honestly don't care if he wants to do it when he's wide open. I didn't feel like he was necessarily wide open in this case because the defense was right there lurking behind him. So, yeah, I just felt like, you know what, you let it slide if you make it. But if you miss it, you got to pull him from the game rightfully. And I think he understood that. That's why he didn't make any eye contact with the coaching staff after he did it, kind of held his head down like, oh, crap, I'm about to get pulled. And he even mentioned it when he did it against the Suns when they were down by like 10 points. Back a few weeks ago, he was like, yeah, I didn't realize we were down in that game. Okay, first of all, I don't believe that. Number two, he also said, if I miss it, I'm probably getting pulled. So he already kind of knows, like, if I do something like this, it's a little bit showmanlike, right? I'm going to get pulled if I don't make it. So I honestly didn't have a problem with him, and I actually put a poll out to ask people if they were upset about it. And 43% said yes, and 57% said no. So I don't think, and that had over 1,300 votes. So I think there's a good amount of people that didn't really care that he missed it. I mean, it is what it is. It's the NBA. It's entertainment. At some point, you have to realize it's a regular season. It's not the end of the world. But yeah, I just felt like, you know what? I think the very next play, they try to redeem him by getting him in the post, and he tried going baseline and then like just kind of threw up a wild shot and it was short, and I think the rim kind of stuffed him again. So that's when Carlisle was like, okay, Siakam, you know, like we got to stop this run. And at that point too, I felt like the bench was so discombobulated in the second quarter that dunk just kind of like was the capper of like how that quarter had been going for the second unit. So I think it was just a little bit of everything involved, but he got back in the game, made some big threes later on. So, you know, kudos to the coaching staff for not holding it against him and for him to bounce back.
And overall, look, I mean, if Obi, you know, if you remove that fast break dunk or if he gets it, I mean, he ended up going 3-5 in the game. So that was one of his two misses, and 2 of 2 from three. That's awesome. And 9 points off the bench. He was a +7. So it's not like that missed dunk was like, oh my God, you cost the Pacers. Hey, I grew up in the world of WWE. I'm a showman. You know, I love some entertainment, so it would have been cool if you could have flushed it, but at the same point, you know what, hey, sometimes that's going to happen. But I think overall, when you look at this team, and we touched on Turner and Siakam, I think they were both awesome. Haliburton just being able to be Haliburton again, play extended minutes, that was massive. And obviously, you know, his 29th double-double, I mean, 22 points, 12 assists, get a block, just one turnover, felt like vintage Haliburton. But also for the bench, there was bright spots. There was. And I think that one of them is TJ McConnell, a guy that I think coming into this year, I didn't think would survive the trade deadline. Felt like many people were like, okay, the writing's on the wall. McConnell, I mean, 16 points, 6 assists, 8 of 10 shooting. He does this in 18 minutes. McConnell is that guy that it's just, it's not going to be every game. Sometimes he might not suit up. But when he does, I just felt that, and this is, we didn't have McConnell last time against the Knicks. McConnell was a bit, you know, he was anchored the bench in this game.
Yeah, I think they're going to need him to suit up quite a bit more just because with the trade of Buddy Hield and who they have on the roster currently, they're going to need TJ McConnell to be more of an efficient player, more of a scorer with that second unit. Obviously, Ben Mathurin is the go-to guy for that bench unit. We know that Rick Carlisle's deemed him as the sixth man, but we know that Ben Mathurin can be inconsistent like he was in this game. So This is where you need a TJ McConnell, a veteran, to kind of do what he does. And he can really play in these type of games with New York because they're real physical. And it kind of allows him to get the separation that he needs to hit that little jumper. He had a beautiful baseline reverse layup in the third quarter. And I was watching Tibbs the entire time he's doing it. Tibbs has his arms folded watching him. And as McConnell goes baseline and throws up the reverse layup, Tibbs just throws his hands up in the air, just complete disgust. And I'm just slapping my head off, you know, because McConnell is a frustrating player. It's like, this 6 foot white guy that's doing all this. It's like, how in the world is he torching us like this? But he just does it over and over and over again. And he gets everybody involved. You know, this bench was really bad in the second quarter, but when they came back in the second half, they look like a totally rejuvenated team. So I think you got to give a lot of credit to McConnell for kind of spearheading that. But I think you also have to look at the one major adjustment the Pacers made with that, and that was they kept Andrew Nimhard with that bench unit and took Doug McDermott out. We can talk about McDermott's debut in a little bit, but McDermott did not look great, Focci, in this game. And Andrew Nimhard had to play extended minutes. 34 minutes in this game for Nimhard is quite a bit, especially for a guy that's kind of battled injuries all year long. So having Nimhard out there to play defense was really key, and I think that that's what really helped the Pacers kind of stay afloat and grow that lead a little bit with that bench unit because of the way they were able to stabilize things and not have to be so, you know, worried about their defense. And I think he just having that extra playmaker out there too does make a lot of sense, because for as much as people want to hate on Buddy Hield for what he didn't do, you got to realize that even if he wasn't making shots, he could put the ball on the floor. And there's times where he would get 5-6 assists because he's able to facilitate to a certain level, and not a great facilitator, but he can do it in moments there. So I felt like it was a really smart decision to kind of change the rotation up.
Yeah, it was. And you know, your point on Buddy Hield is like, yeah, Buddy Hield is a very capable passer. McDermott's not going to be out there getting you 5 assists. You know, McDermott's out there, if he's not hitting threes, he's not contributing. And I think that, yeah, he only puts up one shot, he misses it, but it just, he's also a guy who's not known for defense. And it's not that Buddy was either, but I just feel that this is where you're saying, okay, the Pacers definitely didn't come out of this deadline better, but I think we'll see better play from McDermott moving forward, just because there wasn't much to really write home about from this performance. But for Nemhard, once again, another one of those games that if you're just looking from a box, you know, score standpoint, he's not blowing you away, but Nemhard led the Pacers in plus minus. Yep. He did, because that defense is just something that they didn't have much of before. And I felt that it was evident. It was very well, you know, you could see it. Nemhard's contribution, the 34 minutes that you mentioned. Yeah, that's definitely quite a lot for Andrew Nemhard when you're really looking at when the last time he played 34 minutes. It actually doesn't happen that often. There was one game against Memphis. He played 37 minutes. Other than that, you'd have to go all the way back to December for a game that he played 34 minutes in. So he's typically someone that's, you know, right around that 25, 27 minute mark. So seeing that uptick definitely was evident. But one guy that I do want to shout out from that bench unit is a guy who had an opportunity to play more because Jalen Smith was out. That's Isaiah Jackson. Alex, we can quickly forget just how good Ijax was earlier in the season, because then he kind of, once the team got healthy, he kind of fell out of the rotation. He led the Pacers in the fourth quarter with points. He had 9 points. He was just on 4-4 shooting, 4 boards in the fourth quarter as well. This is a guy that you just feel that, yeah, the Pacers are lucky to have depth at center, but he can play. And you don't know how often he's going to be a part of the rotation, because it doesn't always make sense to play him, Jalen, and Ijax. But this was just another reminder that Isaiah Jackson has developed and is a good piece for this Pacers team when called upon.
Yeah, I definitely felt like he really struggled in that second quarter, Focci. It was just like he was all over the place. I felt like he was fouling kind of ridiculously a few different times there. Got himself, got himself in the air a few times when he was like coming down kind of hard, and I was like, man, that's kind of crazy. He had two goaltends that were just kind of unnecessary. Like the Dante DiVincenzo one, the ball was way short and gave him an extra 2 points, which was not even going to happen. So, yeah, I felt like it was kind of a tale of two halves for Ajax.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
I definitely think that part of that was the Nembhard effect, because I think Nembhard and him have really good synergy together as well. You know, Nembhard just has a really good feel for how other players play and just knows when to fit in and what to do. Like Nembhard can hit that little mid-range jumper, but he's not actively seeking for his shot offensively. Yeah. And I think when he does, the team's worse.
So I agree with that.
If he just kind of picks and chooses,
for sure. Yes.
Picks and chooses his spots, that's when he's better. But yeah, I thought Isaiah Jackson was very effective on the glass too. Something that the Pacers really struggled with last time against New York, we talked about it, was the rebounding. So just to get him out there, and I feel like Precious Achiuwa playing like 44 minutes in this game, you know, getting the Tibbs treatment, right? It's just one of those things where it's like having fresh legs to go up against a guy that's pretty athletic and springy, like a Precious Achiuwa, does help. And it doesn't put so much pressure on Miles to kind of be like the sole rebounder for this team. And without Jalen Smith, it was a good opportunity. But at the same time, you felt how bad this team missed Jalen Smith in that first half of that second unit. And I think he just opens up things a little bit more, because with Ajax, you know that it does kind of clog the rim.
Definitely.
And so that's where I think McConnell and Ajax can play very well together, because they can run that pick and roll, pick and roll game. And that way TJ can get downhill, throw it to Ajax if he needs to, but more of the time it's going to spread the floor out for him in terms of getting into the paint. But it kind of clogs the paint for a guy like Mathurin trying to drive. So that's where I think you can see maybe it affects Mathurin more when Ajax is out there versus Jalen Smith. I'm going off of a very small sample size here, obviously. But I just feel like in this game, you know, New York's a very physical, defensive-minded team. You need someone to be a little chippy. And I enjoyed that. When Isaiah Jackson had those hard fouls, a lot of times you see a guy go help the other player up that you messed up. Ajax just kind of stares at him like, get up.
I like it, baby. I'm here for it. You know, the Pacers, it's everything we talked about earlier in the year when they needed to get tougher. Ajax has brought that toughness. His 8 rebounds tied Turner for the lead on this team. But, you know, Turner grabs 8 in 31 minutes. Ajax grabs 8 in 17 minutes. So it's just, he's always been a good rebounder, but he's never playing, you know, 25 to 30 minutes. So he was a +9, which was the second, not the second best, but it led the bench unit. So that was good to see. But yeah, there's obviously, hey, there was the fouls, this and that. But overall, you know, good to see him out there. He's someone who kind of mucks it up, and I think that they needed some of that intensity against New York. You know, no Hartenstein. He had 19 rebounds last time. I mean, that was huge. Achiuwa and Hartenstein just destroyed the Pacers, and I felt that was not the case this time. So that was a big difference, but also Indiana cut down some of those fouls. Obviously, they weren't giving up a lot of second chance points to the Knicks. But I think something that we got to talk about is, you know, the shooting performances that Indiana had. So they shoot over 70% in the first quarter. They shot over 70% in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a Knicks team that is a good defensive team. They're obviously not the same defensively with a few guys out, but you shot 61% against this Knicks team, out rebounded them. This was a good performance by Indiana, something very encouraging, because I know sometimes with this fan base, one loss does feel like the sky's falling down. And that loss to Golden State, I think you could hear across the fan base, you just weren't ready, didn't show up. Indiana showed up against the Knicks, and I think that the schedule moving into the All-Star break is very favorable for Indiana to go into that break with some serious momentum right now, and that I'm really excited about, because you start to look at it around and you don't want to get too ahead of yourself. Philly is free-falling right now. They are really free-falling. Indiana has a good chance to kind of gain some ground, and I think that right now this team, you know, Jalen Smith, obviously he's got the back spasms, want him to get healthy. It could make sense to potentially keep Jalen Smith out for the remaining 2 games. I don't know what the plan is, but something like that to be able to give him almost 2 weeks of rest could be pretty big.
That makes sense. I'm not going to be a doctor here and say I know what's going on with Jalen Smith, but he's been dealing with back spasms, I feel like, all season long.
Yep.
Even going back, I think like the first time he really missed time was against the Bucks back in November. And he was supposed to play, and then all of a sudden, like right before the game, decided he just didn't feel right. So Yeah, that's been something he's been dealing with. But you talk about shooting. I think one guy we didn't give enough credit to when we were kind of recapping everybody was Aaron Nesmith. If you go back and look at what he did in the second quarter, Fauci, 3 of 3 from 3 for 9 points. And honestly, every three that he took felt like a huge basket because it's like as the Knicks kept closing in on that lead, there would be Nesmith there hitting another one off of a Tyrese pass or whoever was throwing the ball to him. I just felt like he really locked in and hit some difficult shots from 3, went 3 of 3 from 3 in that quarter. So led the team in scoring with 9 points in the second. I just feel like, you know, Aaron Nesmith, he had a tough challenge too because Nembhard got an early foul trouble guarding Brunson. They had to bring Nesmith back into the game in the first quarter to go in for Nembhard to guard Brunson. Obviously, Brunson dropped 39 points. Like, he still did what he does. But they kind of held everybody else in check. And I think that kind of just shows you, like, how good this team could be. I know Alec Burks had a good game. You were tweeting about that because that's the guy that you talked about wanting to trade for.
I wanted him, man. I really did. I just felt that. It's like, look, I'm not saying that Alec Burks was going to be a guy who's going to get 22 points, but just a good addition for New York.
Yeah. He was really hunting for his shots, too. I think he was third in field goal attempts for the Knicks. So 7 of 14, pretty good shooting from him, and 4 of 7 from 3, 22 points. Like, yeah, he had a good game, but Bogdanovich, you know, he ended up playing 33 minutes, basically, Fauci, in this game, 32 minutes, 58 seconds. And, you know, if Tibbs is going to play him a ton of minutes, we'll see how that lasts for him. You know, with a lot of these injuries, like, you know, it's just interesting. I don't know exactly where the Knicks are going to finish with record-wise because they've got a pretty solid roster. We talked about that. But, yeah, I just wanted to give a little bit of a shout-out there to Nesmith because we didn't really touch on him yet. And I feel like we've touched on almost everybody else. Ben Mather, and we didn't say too much about him. Felt like he kind of struggled in this game as well. But, you just needed a big shooting performance from Nesmith, and he hit some timely threes.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, no Ben Shepherd in this game.
Are you shocked?
You know, no, I'm just wondering. It's the first time we saw Doug McDermott out there. No Ben Shepherd. Just curious if that's something to keep an eye on. I mean, look, it's not like Doug McDermott played a heavy amount of minutes. It was just 7 minutes. But just curious to see, you know, how that shakes out moving forward.
Yeah, my thought from watching Doug McDermott is he looks a step slower than when he was here last time.
I mean, that's understandable. It's been a couple of years. Good old Dougie, he ain't getting younger, but
he just turned 32, Fauci. I'm going to be 32 this year. You're 32 right now, right?
I'm 32, man. It takes a little second longer to get out of bed in the morning, you know, knees so crack old. A little bit. So, you know, for McBuckets, I understand. I mean, this isn't, you know, quite a few years ago when you were just, you know, playing some of your best ball, but at the same point, it's just something to keep an eye on. And I think that, We can't write him off after one game. There will be moments. You know, I think he'll have plenty of opportunities where he could hit two or three threes in a game and we'll say, all right, hey, cool. But, you know, for now, I mean, obviously, Buddy Hield was someone who made his debut with Philly. What were your thoughts? He seemed like he got a lot of shots. You know,
Buddy Hield's?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they didn't have Tyrese Maxey at his first game either. So it's kind of like, hey, buddy, do what you got to do.
Buddy Show.
It's on 21 shots. It was he 8 of 21 from the field? 4 of 12 from 3. Had some good rebounds. Look, we know Buddy Hield can be inefficient, but he did much better. I think he was 9 of 16, 4 of 9 from 3 in the next game against the Wizards. So, obviously, you know, Hawks, Wizards aren't the greatest teams to really look at in terms of like, hey, Stolt defense is really slowing down Buddy Hield or making it difficult. But, you know, Buddy Hield is not the number one option for any team, right? I think if you get a healthy Joel Embiid with Tyrese Maxey, like, yeah, it can make some sense for Buddy Hield. But I want to go back to McDermott real quick because you said, you know, he might hit some threes. Look, I watched Doug McDermott play for 7 minutes last night, and every time down the floor the Pacers were on defense, I said, oh, my God, where are they going to hide him at? And you can sit here and talk about the defense Buddy Hield played, but this isn't a hot take. Buddy Hield is a much better defender than Doug McDermott.
Definitely.
He can put the ball on the floor. McDermott really can't do that. And then catch and shoot wise, I mean, yeah, Doug can do that, but I think Buddy just is so much better at getting open. So I would say, like, in terms of, like, you know, pecking orders or like tiers, whatever, like Buddy Hield's like in the S tier and McDermott's in the B tier. So you're talking about like S, then A, then B. So like he's a couple notches ahead of him in terms of like what he brings to the table for this team. So like if you're going to play Doug McDermott as your 10th man, I really worry about the defense of McDermott and Toppin out there together. I just don't think it's going to be something that's going to be able to work long-term. So we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously McDermott first game didn't really get a practice in with the team yet. So
He's
going to work his way into it. And there's going to be moments where you're probably like, okay, maybe he's not as bad as that first game was. And I think that's the case for a lot of players when they get traded to a new team. It's all so fresh and new and they're trying to figure things out. Like even Siakam took a little bit of time trying to get acclimated with this team. So not saying that, and I just think we kind of know who McDermott is. I think 80% of his shots this season, Facci, have been from three. So We know exactly what he can do. He's just not very versatile, where Buddy Hield could give you a little bit more versatility offensively. And that's where I think the Pacers have to consider what do they do with McDermott long-term in terms of like the rest of the season. So I shouldn't say long-term, but for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Do they play Ben Shepherd? Does it make more sense? I don't think Ben Shepherd's necessarily ready for big-time minutes come playoff time. But at least on the defensive side of things, you know he's going to give you a lot more.
Yeah, a lot.
So if you're looking at both of them as your 10th man, I hate to say it, but I think it's probably an overreaction to game one of just watching McDermott. But I just feel like at this point, it makes more sense to develop Ben Shepherd as the 10th man than to play Doug McDermott 7 minutes because look how much better they were when he wasn't in the game in that third quarter, fourth quarter with the second unit. So no offense to Dougie. He's a major drop-off from Buddy Hield, and people hated Buddy Hield for what he did. Just imagine how they're going to feel about Doug McDermott if he's getting 15 minutes a game.
That I definitely get. I do think one of the differences, and like I mentioned before, you know, maybe an episode or two ago, was, you know, I think the Pacers have that opportunity where they could not play Doug McDermott, and it's not a storyline. If Buddy Hield was not getting played, it is a storyline, and he's going to be upset, and you know, it's not going to be a good situation. So I think, when would there be a situation where Buddy would play 7 minutes and have one shot? You know, that wouldn't go well. So I'm very curious to see, you know, what happens with this. And I think that maybe if McDermott goes 1 of 1 from three, you start to say, okay, well, hey, you know what? They brought him strictly in as a three-point shooter. That's what he does. You know, he'll be just fine. So let's just have to wait and see. But I do think that come playoff time, you could make an argument that Ben Shepherd and Doug McDermott might not be what you really want, you know, in a playoff series. So we'll have to wait and see. I think that Ben Shepherd was definitely getting valuable experience. I don't want to see him just out of the rotation. And this is a classic one game overreaction, but let's just have to, you know, monitor that situation and take it from there. I think that overall, I mean, hey, the Pacers got a win. Never easy to win on the road, but I think that this is now they're 13-13 on the road. They're a 500 team on the road. That's what it takes to be a playoff team, being able to win games on the road. So I'm happy about this, and I think that this is something that Indiana can build off of.
Yeah, the Pacers are still holding on to that sixth seed by a half game over the Orlando Magic.
They're close.
The Orlando Magic do have the tiebreaker over the Pacers, so that's got to be something where they want to separate themselves from Orlando. But like you said, Philadelphia, they're starting to free fall.
They've played Pacers two more games than the Pacers. Yeah. So that's something to factor in.
Yeah, Pacers are 3.5 games behind the Knicks in fourth. That's going to be hard to get up to. We'll see what happens with Milwaukee if they start to struggle a little bit. But last I checked, Orlando had the easiest remaining schedule. They've got a lot of cupcake games coming up. I mean, I was like blown away, Fachi, when I was looking at their schedule. I was like, this is who they get to play coming back from the All-Star break? Like, I know we get the Pistons, but like, this is, let me see what they had again, because I want to show you like some of the games they have coming up. It's just kind of wild to me. I'm trying to see when they play again here. I apologize for this terrible podcasting here, but so they've got the Thunder and the Knicks before the All-Star break. When they come back, yeah, okay, they've got the Cavs. So that's three tough games right there. But listen to this. Pistons, Hawks, Nets, Jazz to finish out February. Then they start March off Pistons, Hornets, Wizards.
Wow. I mean, that's a stretch where anything more than one loss is probably a little bit on the surprising side.
Yeah, and so after that, then they'll play the Knicks and the Pacers and the Nets. The Raptors twice, which they're not great. They're probably trying to lose to get that draft pick. The Hornets, and then they go on a road trip, and that or they have a homestand against some good Western Conference teams. So, I mean, it's not like it's super, super easy, but there I was just like, man, that's a lot. They got the Hornets like three times and the Pistons a few more times, and I'm like, man, this is going to get interesting here. So you got to just stay afloat, Pacers do, and just take it one game at a time and not get too ahead of themselves and looking at the strength of schedules. But yeah, I think if Indiana wants to stay at six, they're going to have to really keep their eye on the Magic. We'll see what the Heat do, but I'm not even worried about the Heat because I feel like they're a team that doesn't care where they're seated at. And they'd be like, oh, all right, we'll take Boston first round. Well, we'll beat them.
Yeah, the Heat seem very reminiscent of like the Warriors, where they're just like, just get us in the play and play playoffs, whatever it is, we'll be just fine. But for Philly, they did recently sign Kyle Lowry, so help is on the way. Who knows what happens with Joel Embiid and when he'll return. But for right now, they're at least a team that made some adjustments at the deadline between bringing in Buddy Hield and Kyle Lowry. You could definitely say that, hey, those were upgrades over Korkmaz and Marcus Morris and Pat, yeah, Pat Bev. I mean, you know, solid player, but, you know, whatever. I think at this point, Philly, we'll see what happens to them, but it is realistic for Indiana to be able to jump them in the standings. It really is. I think if you're the Pacers, as time goes on, you start to really shift your expectations from what I mentioned earlier of like playing team to like you really want to be a top six team. Like you really do, and you really feel that it can happen. Mm-hmm. So I'm really hopeful for it. I'm excited. The schedule is appealing. It might not be Orlando Magic appealing, but it's still pretty solid. And at this point, you know, in the year at 30-24, Alex, you gotta be happy with what we've seen. You gotta be coming into the year. I'll stand by it. I felt this Pacers team could very well win about 45 games. We're on a good pace right now, shifting that closer to that 48-50 win mark. I mean, that would be quite a season for the Pacers.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, and they'll be right at 28 games on the road and 28 games at home by the time the All-Star break gets there. So we got a good sample size, and if they can be 17-11 and 15-13 on the road, like that's really a strong record moving forward, getting to 32 wins with, you know, I'm trying to remember how many games it'd be, 26 games left, I think, come back from the All-Star break. So That gives you a pretty good idea of where this team could finish at. Maybe they get to 46 wins. Who knows? I mean, I'm not trying to sit there and get too excited, but that's a possibility. They could get to 44, 46, something like that if they just play good basketball the rest of the way. And, you know, I was looking, Fauci, before the Knicks game at the numbers in terms of, like, Pascal Siakam and, like, all the starting lineups. He's had six different starting lineups in 12 games before last night. Wow. So 6-13 now, technically. But that lineup that they've had the last couple of games here, it makes you wonder, because I don't know if you saw this or not, but Buddy Hield did request a trade.
I don't know if I did see that. Who reported that?
So Greg Doyle from the Indy Star actually reported that and said that it was kind of, he saw the writing on the wall here with the players ahead of him and his role, and he wanted to be traded to a team that could give him a bigger role and also pay him the money that he potentially wants in the offseason.
Philly has
so
the money.
That's kind of why I think they traded him to Philadelphia. They were trying to do right by Buddy Hield because he didn't make this trade request public. It was kind of quiet. And I think Tony East actually followed up from Greg Doyle's reporting and kind of got his own reporting on it and confirmed what Greg had said. So, you know, two different people there did confirm that. So it does make a little sense why they moved him now. And it makes you feel a little less upset with like the return they got back because their hands were tied a little bit, but they would have been even more tight had Buddy kind of made this public. So, and I understand why they did it, but maybe we should have been a little bit smarter with our detective hats and realize why are they going to Nembhard now against the Hornets? I think that made a lot of sense now that you think about it. Two games before the deadline, see what you have with this group and start to get them going. Because if you already know Buddy Hield's going to be on the move, might as well make that change. And I think they just need to continue writing it out with this five for the rest of the season. Don't make any more changes because I don't really think they can afford to. And it'll allow them to get the chemistry they need because right now I think they had played as a starting five, as a lineup together, 57 minutes before the next game. So not sure how many minutes that group played together, but I'm sure they didn't play more than 30, so or even more than 40-something. So they clearly have not even reached 100 minutes played together as a starting five. So they have to continue to build that chemistry together because they're way down the line in terms of like what other teams have in terms of their total chemistry and total overall possessions played together. So have to work on that.
I'm a big fan of this starting five that we've seen lately. I do think that this is probably the Pacers' best starting five that they could really put together. Some could argue Mathurin has a higher score potential, but they need defense. They need defense. And that's where Andrew Nembhard, I think, fits in perfectly as that fifth starter that can be overshadowed from a shot, you know, perspective. I think that's fine. You don't want Mathurin to be overshadowed and be a guy that's putting up six shots in the starting lineup. He's not going to be at his best. So I think we knew that even when the Pacers had success with Jalen at the four next to Miles, we felt that was not like a long-term lineup. You know, that was like, hey, this is working well right now. Pacers, you know, went on a good winning streak. That was great. But this lineup feels more sustainable, feels more balanced defensively. And I think I'm excited about that. But overall, as we kind of start to put a bow on this, it was nice to get some payback against the Knicks. It was great to be able to show up in the fourth quarter. I think Indiana had some struggles from time to time, you know, of like, hey, you might start a game hot, but can you close it hot? They did it. They did it on both sides of the ball. I think they played just – they made all the adjustments. And I think that's a great job of the coaching staff that – when this Pacers team has seen that same team again that beat them, they respond for the most part. Mm-hmm. You got the random outlier against Portland where we lost both times. But against this Knicks team, they made all the adjustments that you needed to make. And I think that's awesome. They win the season series against New York 2-1. It's a team that I'm happy to not have to play again. Some teams we played four times, maybe even the Bucks five. But, you know, this is a Knicks team that – you know, we lost to them while they weren't healthy. We beat them while they weren't healthy. I think that if we meet again, it's the playoffs. And I think that while we got this win, the Knicks aren't necessarily a team that I want to see in the playoffs. There are a few other teams that I would rather see ahead of New York. And I think that I'm happy at this point that we wrapped up that season series.
Yeah, Pacers win the season series 2-1. So good for them. They never had to see OG Anunoby once in that series.
Yep.
They definitely played them while they were a little bit hobbled. And so I don't know if we can really count that as a season series win at full strength, but hey, we'll take it because you just play who's on the schedule and you can't help injuries. So it is what it is. But with that being said, Focci, go ahead and let the people know where they can find us at on social media.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Twitter at PacersPod, STP. You can find Alex on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at _FACCI. You can find us on Instagram at PacersPodSTP. You can find us on Facebook at Setting the Pace. You can find us on TikTok at Setting the Pace. And Alex, tell them where they can check us out on YouTube.
Ladies and gentlemen, go to youtube.com/Setting the Pace, a Pacers podcast, where you can find all of our video content. Thank you all so much for subscribing to the YouTube channel. And please leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, wherever you get your show. Please let us know what you think by giving us a nice 5-star rating. But with that being said, Focci, if you're hoping the Pacers can close out the rest of this road trip with two victories, then hit me with those three words.
Let's go, Pacers!
This is Tyrese Halliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.